This is the Drive and Dish Podcast. Talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
Look at Tony Parker during the playoffs where he got destroyed by Chris Paul. He shot 29% and averaged 11 points a game during the playoffs. He was bad. In Eurobasket this summer, he was bad. I am not in on the Spurs. I'm really worried about their point guard play.
Kevin Rayfuse.
The Warriors, I don't know what the Warriors suddenly did to get disrespected all of a sudden. Because from game one to the last game in June, game six, this team was the best team in the NBA.
And Justin Kuzart.
And their rebounds, they had about 43 a game, which was like 18. So maybe that's what Tristan Thompson sees and says, look, you guys need help on the rebounding end. Like, pay me money.
Well, if you like that, you're going to love this.
Well, if anything, this is the point where we all sit there and get real excited.
Let's do this.
Let's go.
So we hope everybody enjoyed the new intro right there. Thank you, Justin, for creating that. I know we've had our old intro for probably a year now.
I was going to say the other day I got a time hop update that I made the new intro, so that's why I made a new one.
Yeah, so we switched up a little bit, and as always, thank you to Steve Crumley, who is the voice behind our intro, the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Shout out to our man Steve, and of course Justin for creating it. But here on the Drive and Dish NBA podcast, it's been quite the food week, and let's just say one of them has been, or sounds at least, pretty glorious. The other one, well, it was really terrible. So we'll start with the good first. Justin, there is a burger, and our Canadian listeners can actually eat this. We unfortunately can't in America. We might have to road trip to Canada to get this. But why don't you explain what exactly this burger is, because it's wild.
Okay, so you take the burger, and then you take Reese's peanut butter cups, and you put them inside the burger, like cheese-filled burger, stuff like that. Well, instead of cheese, it's Reese's peanut butter cups.
And what else is on the burger? You got to give them the whole rundown.
Well, that's in the burger. So then on top of the burger is onion rings and more Reese's peanut butter cups. And it's all in one burger. And it looks so amazing. It's $15.96.
In Arizona, you guys have heard of the show Man vs. Food, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
We had this place called Lindy's on 4th Avenue, which had made burgers like that, where there were like burgers in between donuts and just weird, crazy stuff. And after trying those weird, crazy burgers, like honestly, none of them are really all that good.
Well, I was going to say, I have a friend who used to work with us here, but he ended up moving to another radio station to do a morning show, and he is close enough that they were able to bring one to him, and he had it, and he said it was amazing.
It's not like peanut butter is a topping on burgers. Like, if you go to a lot of build your own burger places, you can get that. So I feel like this actually works, and I feel like one of these should come here, like, right now.
A Reese's peanut butter cup isn't exactly peanut butter.
Well, no, yeah,
like, but do you tell yourself that when you're eating them to make yourself feel better about it?
It's a protein, man.
But it's like with Cheese Whiz. When you put Cheese Whiz like you're supposed to on your cheesesteak, it's not real cheese, but it's, it just works.
I've never wanted something more in my life than this burger.
Really?
Like,
out of all the things you wanted in your life.
So I contacted them asking if they would ship one to me. And he says, he wrote back, they don't travel well. I was like, I don't care if they travel. Well, I'll eat it anyway. Like, just send me one. And he's like, there's been too much of a demand, so I couldn't. But I tried. And then I asked him, I was like, my boss asked him, he's like, well, will you fly us up there? And he didn't respond.
So Canadian listeners, if you need to go find this burger and try it, and you need to let us know how it is. But the other end of the food spectrum is, we record the show. This is actually a Sunday morning. Usually we record on Saturday morning. And so Tim comes in with a bowl of cereal, or a box of cereal, I should say. But, that's fair. It's breakfast time. Maybe Tim wants to eat a little bit of breakfast quick. And it quite literally tastes like I'm eating a stalk of wheat.
It is not to steal somebody else's joke, but it's basically a big box of go fuck yourself. I mean, it is so bad. It is called Grape Nuts, the original cereal. And it is the worst crap
I've seen.
I threw out, when I poured this at my house, I poured myself a bowl of cereal, and I love cereal, whatever. I've had
Blake
bad
Griffin
cereal, and
know.
I can do it. I threw out this bowl of cereal. It's so bad.
That is the only way I feel like, I mean, it's healthy, so there's that, but I feel like the only the only way you can make this reasonably good is you have to make it unhealthy by, like, putting, like, brown sugar or cinnamon in there or something.
See, a lot of people,
have some fruit,
but
maybe
see, a lot of people
will
use that in yogurt. Like, they'll make a parfait from it.
That's more fair. But again, like, you got to add something to it.
Yes.
Dude, it hurt my teeth.
Well, yeah, I know. So when you gave this to us, you were hyping it up like it was the best thing that you've ever tasted. And so I got a few pieces first, and I knew the second I tasted how terrible and what you were doing. So then I had to fake the fact that I liked it so that Kevin wouldn't just be like, oh, no, I'm not going to touch that.
Is that what you did?
I was trying. I don't know if I did a good job or not, but I was really
trying.
It was
just, like, so dry and so, oh, God, just... It needs something. It needs sauce.
I think
it's like the personality that if you were to give a personality of Popovich, you know how he's so plain and straight-faced.
But Popovich is great. That's
I'm not saying he's a bad person. I'm just saying like the personality, how he's so straight faced. There's never too much excitement out of him. That's what I expect from this cereal.
I guess the point is go eat a burger stuffed with Reese's peanut butter cups, but for the love of God, do not eat grape nuts unless maybe you add something to them.
I can't believe that they sell this.
People like that stuff.
It is so bad.
I feel like you have to be over the age of 65 to like that.
And have fake teeth?
Yeah.
If we're talking about cereal that's good, those O's, I think they're called O's.
Honey O's, yeah, dude.
Are so good.
So under, and no one knows what they are. They only come in small boxes. They're in the most, like, they're in a yellow box. It's so inconspicuous, and I'm telling you, it's one of the best cereals.
The only reason I don't buy them is because I eat all of them immediately. Like, it will last a day, and then they'll all be gone.
That's how I am with 2 liters of soda. That's why I don't ever have soda in my house.
I'll just
plow through 2 liter one day.
Yeah. I try to stay away from soda because I love it too much.
I'm pretty done with soda as well. But this is the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. My name is Kevin Rafuse. Joining me to my left, my co-host, Tim Tompkins.
Ball don't lie.
And behind the boards, keeping us honest as always, our producer, Justin Kuzart.
You can change the owner, you can change the players, but the Clippers are who they've been for the past 30 years.
Oh, I know this.
Who hates the Clippers?
No, it's Mark Cuban.
Yes, Mark Cuban. Yeah, I was going to say, this one's real obvious. Yeah, that was right before they played each other, and they put Cuban and Doc on the kiss cam that game.
Yeah, I saw that. That was hilarious.
So that was good. That was good.
I mean, those poor Mavericks rolling out, a backcourt of Raymond Felton and J.J. Barea.
Whoa, Raymond Felton dropped 18 points on your Suns the other night, Tim.
I know. It was what it was. But, I've watched a few more games, and oh, my God, that is a horrid backcourt. Wesley Matthews did play, but for extended stretches of the game, you're looking at Raymond Felton and J.J. Barea.
Although I will say, everyone's really high on Zaza Pachulia.
Are they? Just the one person you talk to on our Facebook?
No. I'm talking about, like, a lot of ESPN articles are saying, like, he's a good fantasy option this year.
He's averaged, what, like 8 and 9 or something?
I mean, if you need rebounds and stuff like that, though.
Yeah.
All right, fine. So you're not high on Zaza. Fair enough.
No, Zaza is one of those players where you just, like, you know what you're getting out of him, which is not much.
Which is good in fantasy, though. If you know and expect and get the consistency, then there it is.
Like DeAndre Jordan, he's on one of your fantasy teams, right?
No. I stayed away from him because of free throws.
Yeah, there was something. He had 5 blocks the other day, but I went and looked at his free throw percentage.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this is why this. No, it is yours.
DeAndre Jordan?
In your Roto League.
I thought I stayed away from him for that exact reason.
I swear to you, and that's why you have a 1 in free throw percentage.
I mean, that's
so
probably
maybe
valid.
It is me. I didn't think I got him, but okay. But yeah. Blocks, I mean, hey, I'm good on blocks. I'm defending myself now that...
No, I actually, maybe he had 7 blocks, like 15 points, 19 rebounds, and like 1 of 40 from the...
I'll take it. I'll take it. If it's my team, I'll take it.
You can't do it in Roto, man. You can't do it.
I'll just get some good free throw shooters.
So normally we like to read a funny review because we really appreciated all of your guys' creativity when it comes to leaving us a review on iTunes. But we're going to go with something a little bit more from the heart this week.
Yeah, this is genuinely one of the nicest reviews we've ever gotten. So this is... It's a 5-star review from America. The title of the review is "You Should Give Yourself More Credit." It's by @Willis_Glenn. Willis Glenn says, "Hey guys, I really enjoy the podcast. I know you guys set aside comments along the lines of you're the best, etc. I feel like you should give yourself more credit. You consistently produce entertaining and insightful content, and I appreciate that you don't ascribe more expertise to yourselves than is appropriate given your relationship to the league, organizations, etc. I know there are other podcasts that can offer things you cannot. For example, no one has the platform that Zach Lowe has to get guests from the highest levels of the industry. There are many ways to evaluate quality and value from downloads downloads to reviews and such. But if you're evaluating based on how much I personally look forward to your podcast as compared to how much I look forward to others I regularly listen to, then you measure up well. Sure, I get different things from other content, but I look forward to yours as much as I look forward to any others. Keep up the great work. Good luck. I hope you guys are able to make progress towards sponsorship and other goals. And good luck to each of you individually as you work to make progress against your professional ambitions.
Wow, that's really nice, actually. Yeah. I mean, I understand where he's coming from because I'm a huge fan of Ion Basketball Podcast. But I subscribe to all the different podcasts, the ESPN Lockdown, the Dunked On, Real GM, blah, 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 all of those. But I really look forward to Ion whenever they post it, mm-hmm. more hands down more than any other podcast. So I understand where Willis is coming from that, and that is really nice.
I, too, understand because I get really excited for Walking Dead.
What? Walking Dead is great, but I can only watch it on Netflix.
Is it great?
Yes,
it's
it is.
So good.
Kevin, you are the only person that doesn't like this show.
You haven't seen this?
I haven't seen the new
episode. Oh, my God, everybody
season.
Dies.
Guys.
Do not.
I'm kidding.
We're gonna make this an intro 1 week because The Walking Dead is quite possibly
so
the most overrated TV show
it is,
of all
it
time.
It is amazing.
Z Nation, too. You got to check them
anything.
Out, man.
They don't
do So Kevin watched...
They do everything. They survive.
They don't know. They sit in a barn for 6 straight episodes and don't go anywhere.
Like season 2.
And yeah, that's where I stopped.
Kevin watched season 1 and season 2 and then decided he no longer wanted to watch it, and so therefore it's overrated.
Oh,
I understand
so
how people get these things within themselves that they just start to believe something because they've said it so many times.
They didn't do anything in season 2.
They
like,
did.
Come on, they didn't do anything.
I actually really liked
season
2.
Dude, a guy got his head cut off in the show.
It's a zombie apocalypse. It should be happening all the time.
And it does. I mean, in this newest season, it's 3 episodes in, and holy crap, I've cried
twice.
The Walking
Dead is not...
Yeah, I bet.
The Walking Dead is not the worst show on television. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it is... Very, very overrated.
No. Not remotely.
It's right where it should be.
Yeah, no, it's amazing.
Well, we can continue this later, but why don't we get into some news?
Tell me something I do not know. Do not know. Now.
If you do not know the present, how can you claim to know the future?
Now on NBA News on the Drive and Dish podcast.
We need to know now.
All right, first in the news, Kobe Bryant says he wants to let the younger players develop and not take over games as much this year. Backup big man Kendrick Perkins is listed as out indefinitely with a right pectoral injury. The Pelicans announced this on Sunday. Jimmer Fredette was taken second in the D-League draft by Westchester. DeMarcus Cousins left the Kings-Clippers game with a sore Achilles. Pistons guard Jody Meeks will be out 12 to 16 weeks with a Jones fracture. This is the same injury Kevin Durant had last year. And lastly in your news, ESPN has announced that they will no longer have Grantland. There were currently 40 writers for Grantland. And that's your news for this week.
Something.
So what was an incredibly disappointing news, not just from a basketball standpoint, but just from a general entertainment standpoint. I know that they had done a really amazing interview with Michael Stipe post-REM that I really enjoyed as well. It's just really great analysis is the closing down of Grantland, which I felt like was hands down best part of ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
Well, isn't this kind of ESPN getting back at Bill Simmons because he made some comments? A lot of people I've been talking to are like, that's just ESPN showing their power.
But here's my thing, though, is like Bill Simmons and that whole situation happened months ago. Like, we knew Bill Simmons is going to take shots at ESPN. We know he's at HBO now. And they knew that, you know, a lot of the writers, there were about 5 writers who jumped ship with Simmons, which you expect to happen. I mean, Bill Simmons started Grantland. There's obviously that loyalty factor there. But there were still a ton of talented writers, you know, Zach Lowe among the most important. You know, Andrew Sharp was still there in terms of pure basketball. But some of these other guys that you know, Bill Barnwell for football and Andy Greenwald for entertainment. And there were just a ton of great writers here. And ESPN had said multiple times that they were committed to keeping the site going. And then all of a sudden, on just a drop of a bomb, Grantland's gone.
Well, and so I was going to say, I saw that, there's 40 or so writers for, there was 40 so writers for Grantland. And I guess a CNN member said that they were going to stay with the team.
They're still going to honor the contracts. They can't get out of
honoring
contracts.
But now I hear that they're going to be gone after their contracts are done.
Yeah, it's like Grantland was one of the few sites that I would go to on a weekly basis, and no matter if it was basketball or something else, there was always great analysis on something that I found interesting.
It was thoughtful, quality writing. It was quality writing from up and down. We all three of us were avid readers of the site. It was, you know, I learned things from Grantland. The writing there, again, Zach Lowe to me is the best basketball writer in the game. So
he's obviously not out of a job.
Right. And none of these guys are going to be without jobs long. You know, like we said, ESPN, I do respect ESPN for honoring their contracts, and there are reports going around that ESPN wants to kind of sprinkle the writers on other things and bring them in for other segments. But the issue is, you know, I'm not going to bash ESPN. ESPN definitely has things that I don't like, but they also provide quality content. I like a lot of their staff and I like a lot of the programming. I'm not just going to bash ESPN for the easy argument of bashing ESPN.
The thing with them is they make it really like their stats and stuff that they put out is very simple, and anybody who's anybody can understand what's going on. Like when I first got into basketball, when we would go to NBA.com or you know, even just looking at stats in general, I'd look at them and be like, I have no idea what these mean half the time. With ESPN, it was always so like, here it is, this is what it means, blah blah blah. But now, like, now that
the question is, I have is, you know, ESPN also low-key laid off 300 employees.
I do want to talk about that. It wasn't low-key. It all happened after they keep signing these new bigger contracts for their sports deals, like the new contract that the NBA just got.
Right.
And so part of that, and I'm really happy you mentioned this, Kevin, because I felt like we were never going to talk about this, is I am so tired of greed by both players and owners of these sports franchises that they want to get paid so much money that the tickets for these games are
so
through
high.
The roof that the affiliates that carry their games have to lay off their staff. And you guys are already, owners and players, making millions of dollars. And personally, like, I'm tired of it.
This is as we get closer to the looming lockout threat that I don't want to quietly acknowledge is happening in the summer, I think we'll get into more of that. But then it's interesting with ESPN, though, just going back to the network itself, is that ESPN for the longest time was the unquestioned sports station. You know, now Fox Sports 1 is starting to
gain some
credibility.
There's more competition.
And there's more, and you know, Yahoo. You look at Adrian Wojnarowski and all the great work that they've done over there. And
when they carried that football game live on Yahoo for the first time, the Jags, which got like 15 million viewers, those Jags versus Bills.
And I'll say, I was impressed. There was no like problem streaming it. I was actually watching on my phone. It wasn't cutting in and out. Like it was legit.
You're just curious, or I guess as a fan, I'm hoping ESPN doesn't dumb themselves down to fluff and entertainment programming, which, to put it bluntly, I feel like has kind of been happening a little bit.
Yeah,
I'm not going to squeeze shots on anybody right now because we're silly ourselves, but it, you know, I hope that it's not getting dumbed down. And I hope that, but it's an interesting, and I think it shows the market, and where the market's at is that the ability to get quality sports content is now essentially on the listener, on the viewer, on anything to, you know, do their own homework. And it's just accessible in a lot of different places now, is I guess what I'm trying to say.
Right.
It's not just, you know, you don't just have to go to ESPN to get all your news. You know, there are so many different outlets. And you wonder, just, is it the marketplace shifting, or is it ESPN making some internal decisions?
I mean, I do not go, and I haven't gone to ESPN for my basketball analysis ever. I'm not going to sit here and take shots at ESPN like you won't, but I do not think that they've ever really provided the best basketball analysis. Now, maybe they do with football. I honestly don't know. But I've always felt like my best basketball analysis came from podcasts and other writers. Even CBS Sports, I feel like, does a much better job covering the NBA. When you look at an ESPN article, and that's part of what made Grantland so great, is, you know, for the most part, they're talking about like LeBron James and Kobe Bryant.
The other problem,
they
never threw numbers, it seemed like, in those in some of the ESPN articles. It would be like they'd be making points, and I'd be like, okay, but where's the
yeah, so if you read Grantland, like, they'd break down how a team guards the pick and roll, whether they're showing or hedging or you know, what switching, whatever it might be. ESPN doesn't do any of that.
Yeah, they don't give
I just want substance, I guess, is the point that we're all trying to make. And it seems like at times that, and this maybe is a reflection on everything, because obviously, you know, we all work in news and in pop culture, so we see this a lot too. But I wish, and maybe this is a bigger critique, but we got to stop dumbing stuff down. Nobody takes the time to read and appreciate quality work anymore. You got to look beyond the headlines. And I just, again, this is, you know, maybe this is me yelling at a cloud right now, but it seems like nobody wants to do their homework anymore. They click their link, you get your little 15-second quote that you get from there, and you move on. And it's just, it's not, it's a disservice to everyone who tries to learn more about something. You know, if you're a basketball fan, you should look beyond the headlines and you should end the games and go into what's beyond it. You know, if you're reading about news, you need to not just, you know, take what's being fed to you. It's, you know, people got to do their homework. I feel like we're such an ADD generation anymore, and that's society. That's not just one generation in particular. And again, forgive me if I sound like an old man yelling at a cloud, but it's just, you know, where did the love for substance go? I want something. I don't want to keep eating fast food. I want my steak and potatoes and vegetables.
Well, speaking of substance. You are listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rayfuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Cousart.
So we are joined on the line now by a special guest. It's Aaron Prine. He's at Prine, P-S, that's P-R-E-I-N-E on Twitter. He is the host of the Project Spurs Cast. That's a podcast for those of you not getting the reference there. And there's also, of course, ProjectSpurs.com. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Aaron, let's get right into this. It has been a long off season for the Spurs, and I was checking out the Spurs Reddit, among other things, and it seems like there is one burning question that Spurs fans have to know going into this season. Why did the Spurs waive Jimmer Fredette?
When they brought him on, the Spurs were hard on for three-point shooting. They were really looking to fill that void ever since they lost Marco Bellinelli. And that was it was a team that lived by the three and died by the three a lot the last couple of seasons, and they really needed a boost there after losing Marco. And then Jimmer came in, and he couldn't hit any three-point shots, but he couldn't do anything else. His lack of defensive abilities has been well-known ever since he came into the league, so he just really didn't have a shot.
Okay. And, well, before we get into specific players on the team, the team made some big moves. They brought in LaMarcus Aldridge. The International Sports Hub has the Spurs listed as the fourth best team in the NBA, and I know we're only a few games in. Do you think they're right with that? Do you think they maybe underestimated them or overestimated them?
As long as all four of the teams are in the West, I really don't have any problem with it. And the top of the West is so top-heavy with Golden State, the Clippers. You're looking at the Thunder now with Durant coming back and the Spurs. I mean, all four of these teams, and I'm pretty sure that I'm ignoring somebody, but I'm just throwing out the top of the West here, and it's really interchangeable at this point, and you got to let the season play out. But as long as they don't have the Cavaliers above any of those four, I'm fine. That's the problem that I've been having ever since off-season started. Everyone's picking the Cavs to win, and whoever comes out of the West is going to truck the Eastern champion. It's just as simple as that.
Yeah, you know, the LeBron James effect is always something. But Justin mentioned it, and the Spurs making kind of an unspursian move, and that's in the sense that they made the biggest splash this offseason. They brought in LaMarcus Aldridge. And we know, previewing the Spurs and as we get into the season, one of the biggest questions is LaMarcus Aldridge, when he was in Portland, was, you know, a guy who needed a lot of touches. And we know the Spurs really like to spread the ball around with Pop's offense. And so the question going into the season was, how would LaMarcus Aldridge fit? And I know it's only been a few games, but I guess what have you seen in terms of LaMarcus Aldridge fitting, and, you know, how do you think the Spurs are going to work him efficiently into the offense?
Well, they're going to do it eventually, because the one thing that Popovich will do, he will make wholesale changes if he needs to. And he likes to have consistency. He likes to build upon something moving forward. But when bringing in somebody like LaMarcus Aldridge, not only just him, but David West and Ray McCallum as well, you know, it's not just, oh, you're going to fit to us. We're also going to change our game to fit around you. And right now they're trying to figure out something completely different, a new identity from the last couple of seasons. So far what I've seen is that they have gone to him quite a bit. They've cleared out, given the ball to him, let him go to work. And they've done the same thing also a little bit with Tim Duncan. So instead of kind of getting early into the offense, whipping the ball around and going for mid-range to three-point shots, they've been slowing it down a little bit, going inside and kind of just dialing back the clock a little bit, see a little bit more four down, but this time you're seeing it with LaMarcus Aldridge. And then also you'll see some elements of what you've seen the last couple of years, where you got the ball whipping around, it's more of a backcourt attack, a lot of off-the-ball motion. So this team is what we're seeing early on, I don't think it's going to be representative of what you're going to see of this team at the end of the year, just as far as, not as far as how well they're executing, but also what they're attempting to do. And then, of course, there's Kawhi Leonard, who has been getting a lot of touches in this offense and who's been taking over quite a bit in the first two games.
Yeah, so I was watching the OKC Spurs game, and so far that's been my favorite game of the season, probably. I was just, and I'm glad you just mentioned this a minute ago, Aaron, but I was looking at both those teams, and I was just thinking, those both look like championship teams. One thing that struck out to me, though, is Kawhi Leonard was getting a lot of looks in crunch time, and it looks like the Spurs are finally beginning to run plays specifically for Kawhi Leonard. And he had a career night, a career scoring night. They didn't end up winning the game. But I was a bit surprised to see Kawhi taking all those end of the quarter shots. Is that something we can expect, or do you think that LaMarcus Aldridge is going to be taking a bit more of those moving forward?
You're going to see Aldridge take some moving forward, and you're also going to see going to Tim and then even Tony and maybe Manu. But with Kawhi, it's not surprising at all because he's had opportunities. Over the last couple of years, it's been increasing where he's had the ball in his hand in closing minutes just because how his offensive game has grown and how his aggressiveness has grown. And he's starting to fully realize that his physical makeup, how he's built and how he can attack, causes a lot of problems because he's just like he's very similar to Durant. I mean, they're not identical, but he's got long arms. He covers a lot of ground. He can be very physical, and he can create contact with ease. So Kawhi realizes that, Pop realizes that, and, you know, he's been successful in closing minutes of game, so the Spurs like to go to him. But you're definitely going to see LaMarcus get the ball a lot more in final seconds, and I don't think you're going to have a case where LaMarcus isn't getting a lot of touches on a regular basis.
So we recently, actually last week, broke down the NBA GM survey, and the view around the league is that Kawhi Leonard is the best defensive player in the league. You know, what do you think of his chances this year to win Defensive Player of the Year, and do you think the NBA GMs are accurate already, despite the fact that Kawhi's still kind of young?
I think they're accurate. Honestly, I think Draymond Green should have won it last year just because the body of work was bigger, but I do think individually, Kawhi was better, but you have to base it on the resume of the season. Kawhi missed a lot of games. And what we've seen already from Kawhi defensively has been incredible. The way he was able to stick with Durant for the entirety of possessions, off the ball, on the ball, even when Durant beat him off the ball, Kawhi could recover. There was that one block where Durant had a step on Kawhi when he went up for that shot. Kawhi still got in front of him, got his hand on the ball, which was with his offhand, too. That was just really incredible. And then the stats that he's been able to rack up, but also what he's able to do for his teammates. The duo that he creates with Danny Green, as far as that backcourt or that wing duo, has to be the best defensive wing duo in the NBA. They were the best last season, in my opinion, and I think if both of them can stay on the floor the entire season, they'll be the best again.
Yeah, I was just looking at it. I'm really impressed by Kawhi's number. He has averaging, I know we're only a few games in, but averaging about 2.5 steals per game and 1.5 blocks on 9 rebounds as well. I'm looking at ESPN, their player rankings. They have Kawhi Leonard at number 8. And I know when that first came out, I went on to Reddit just to see what people were thinking, and I know everybody over there was freaking out saying that was wrong. Do you see him as the 8th best in the league?
Yeah, I've actually flip-flop on this because offensively, from years past, when you look at what he's done, you're like, oh, he's not up there. He can't be. But then you look at what he's been able to do defensively and then what he did in the playoffs during his first championship run. I mean, he's elevated his game each season he's been here, and he's only 22 years old. He's not even really at those prime years of his career. And what we've seen out of him for the first two games of this season, it really puts you on pause thinking, well, okay, maybe he is a top 10 player. And right now, it's hard to argue against it. If he keeps doing what he's doing now, then yeah, for sure, he's a top 10 player. But I think this season is going to be the answer to that. Really, it's hard to say right now.
Well, you got to wonder too, because the Spurs, the way that they play, has a way of downgrading people's stats. You know, if they were on a different team, they'd probably be posting up better numbers. But during that OKC Spurs game, kind of to your point a minute ago, it looked like when Kawhi was going up against Durant that Kawhi was the better of the two players. But so the Spurs' best defensive quarter so far was quarter two versus OKC, and that featured a lineup of Mills, Green, Kawhi, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Duncan that held OKC to 0.75 points per possession. And is that a defensive lineup that we can expect to see a lot more, especially with, I think with the Spurs, they're one thing that they really need to work on is their transition defense. They just don't have a lot of athletic long guys, especially in that second unit.
Well, it's never been about athleticism. They've always been a really good defensive transition team. The problem is that their biggest problem that they're having right now is communication. The one thing I kept seeing in the OKC game and the first half of the Nets game is that there were a lot of guys that were out of place. There wasn't a whole lot of communication. There wasn't a whole lot of hustle. And Popovich about lost his mind in several of the quarters, which is not out of the norm for him, but I really thought he was going to probably kill one of his players in the first half of the Brooklyn game. He really emphasizes getting back on that trend. He never puts a really heavy importance on offensive boards. It's always about getting back on the transition defense, and the team just wasn't doing it. They weren't executing it. There wasn't a whole lot of effort there, and then a lot of guys were out of place. That's definitely going to improve because he's going to beat it into them. And then with that lineup, the one thing that's really interesting about that lineup is Patty Mills in there. And a lot of people don't think of Patty Mills as a good defender, which is, to their credit, something that was very true a couple of seasons ago. But one thing that he had to do in order to secure himself a spot on this team was to become a better defender. And when he got himself into better shape, when he dropped a little bit, shed some weight, toned up a little bit, he was able to use his quickness to hound defenders 94 feet from baseline to baseline, and he's really learned how to battle around screens and beat the screen setter before they can even get the screen set. And that's something that if you watch Patty Mills out on the floor, he's always jumping in between the ball handler and the screen setter and sticking with his man, and he's always really good at recovering. Now, on isolation or man-to-man, he doesn't really have that great of a shot, but when it comes to that the work that he puts in and the team defense aspect, he's one of the best on the team. So he's a really good complement to Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, who all three of those guys can create opportunities and create fast break opportunities for the Spurs.
So you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. We've got Aaron Prine on the line from the Project Spurs cast. So one of the things that has been a bigger concern with the Spurs in recent years has been Tony Parker's health. We know he missed a lot of games last year, and frankly, against the Clippers, he wasn't very effective against Chris Paul. And we know in the past, he's been, you know, the engine that makes this team go, was so crucial when they beat the Heat in the finals. And, right. I mean, arguably has been as important to this team as Duncan, I would say, since maybe about 2007. But we know he's been dealing with the injuries over the years and the miles put onto him because of all the international play with France. You know, how big of a concern is Tony Parker's health, and how do you think the Spurs are going to be able to make their point guard play the most effective if he is continuing to have those injury issues?
See, one thing around here is that a lot of people are kind of passing on the importance of Tony Parker. Now with the addition of Aldridge and West and with the ascension of Kawhi Leonard, I think a lot of people are kind of ignoring the fact that, like what you said, that Tony Parker has been the engine of this offense, and they have relied on him quite heavily. In the 2013 finals against the Heat, and I think it was game two, Tony Parker pulled his hamstring a little bit, and he was never the same for the rest of the series. And they didn't lose the series because of him, but if Parker would have been 100%, it probably would have been much different. And then we saw how he was in 2014. He was a little bit more of himself. He was still banged up, but he was still able to give more of what they needed. And then going into last year's playoffs, he did not have any legs. His best stretch of the season was in March for about 10 games, and then after that he was spent. His ankles, his calves, his hamstrings were all just shot, and they had no hope. And Chris Paul and everybody else was just able to eat him alive. And they still need him going forward. They still need to have that ball handler, that personnel that can attack into the paint, that can suck defenders off of them, keep the defense honest off the shooters, the mid-range shooters in the Spurs front court. And it's the same thing with Manu Ginobili, because these are the two guys who are the primary ball handlers for the Spurs. It's Tony and Manu. And these are two guys that have insane amount of mileage on them, not just in their NBA career, but everything they've done internationally. And these are guys who are playing professional ball internationally before they came into the NBA. So these guys, early in their 30s, they're almost closer to 40 just in terms of basketball mileage. So if either of these guys go down, now you got a whole new problem with San Antonio. Who's going to really initiate and operate that offense? Who's going to be your primary ball handler? We know Diao can do it, but that's, you don't want him operating like a point forward kind of situation. Kawhi Leonard can do it, but it's still not his strength at the moment. So now you're looking at Patty Mills and Ray McCallum. Patty Mills more of a smaller two guard, really. He excels playing off the ball. He's not really great with the ball in his hand. Ray McCallum, we were able to see what he could do when George Karl took over before he was traded to San Antonio, but he's still a little bit of an unknown asset. He hasn't gotten a whole lot of minutes yet with San Antonio. So the Spurs are kind of rolling the dice a little bit, not having that third option who can really attack the paint and go to the rim and draw defenders and, you know, open things up just a little bit more for San Antonio. And they're kind of relying more on LaMarcus Aldridge and Tim Duncan, David West and Boris Diaw, these fours and fives who can hit the mid-range shot to open up lanes more for Tony and Manu, but they still need that attacking ability of those two guys.
Well, my question is, so, you know, you see that Patty Mills is their backup in case something happens to Parker and Ginobili. Mm-hmm. So I was looking at it like, you know, that's a pretty thin, I guess, backup plan. Do you think maybe they could be involved in any trades during the season to try to get another point guard that could potentially have, you know, be more reliable, I guess, is a word I'm looking for?
I don't know. It that would be really out of the norm for them. They're not exactly a team that will pull the trigger on a whole lot of trades. If it comes down to a situation leading up to a trade deadline and it's painfully obvious that they have to resolve the situation, then yes, they could do it. But them going into the season with a full 15-man roster was a surprise to everyone down here, because Popovich usually loves to leave that 15th spot open. Now it's gone to Rasul Butler because of the three-point shooting ability that he provides. I think they're just going to go roll the dice. That's typically Popovich, what he'll like to do. It's like, okay, this is what we got. This is, you know, plan A through whatever, and then we'll just play it however it happens. Typically, over the past few seasons, the only time they really ever traded anybody was just to resolve like Steven Jackson. They did that to just kind of resolve a internal locker room issue. Other than that, they really don't do a whole lot of things to try to make the team better. They don't like making those moves.
You know, the Spurs are they're an interesting team for sure, and they're, you know, like I was saying earlier, you look at them and they look like a championship team. Now, personally, my biggest concern with the Spurs is their lack of point guard depth, and when Tony's on the floor, where are you going to hide him? Defensively, especially, you know, once we're entering the playoffs and depending on the matchups, you can do it. And depending on some matchups, you can't. Like, if they're playing OKC, I have no idea where you hide Tony. If they're playing the Warriors, I think you put them on Barnes. But apart from their point guard play, I know it's a small sample size so far, but what do you think that the Spurs really need to work on throughout the season so that it doesn't follow them into the playoffs?
They need to work on just team rebounding defensively. That was one of the biggest things that they and also defense at the rim. That's one of the big things they lost with Thiago Splitter. He never really got a whole lot of credit for it, but he was a great defensive presence down low. And he's not a stat sheet stuffer. He doesn't have a ton of blocks. He doesn't rack up 15, 20 rebounds, but he does change things for a lot of teams. And he contests a lot, and he causes a lot of misses at the rim. And he allowed Tim to play away from the rim a little bit and go with guys a little bit more one-on-one. Now Tim is going to have to work more in the paint. He's going to have to bang more with the bigger bodies, which is not something we want Tim Duncan to do at his age. LaMarcus Aldridge, not really a guy who's known for his defensive ability Not, you know, he's a good rebounder, but not a great rebounder. David West, you know, we know the kind of edge and what physicality that he can bring, but he's not a really tall guy, not a really strong rebounding presence. So this is something that as a team they're going to have to work on, you know, zone rebounding, you know, finding a guy, blocking him out, getting the ball and going from there, because offensive rebounding has been something that has killed this team recently in the last couple of years, even with Thiago on the team. Now without him, it's already going to be more of a problem. We saw what it did in the OKC game. It allowed OKC to, in the final seconds, to get Russell Westbrook in the corner to hit that three-point shot to tie up the game. So that's something that's really a big concern to me. It's just working on team rebounding and also team communication on defense to kind of seal off the lanes.
Well, my question, and you were just talking about it, how Tim Duncan's probably going to have to bang around in the paint a little bit more, and, you know, obviously you don't want him to do that because he's getting up in there age-wise. It looks like they're playing him about 27 minutes a game so far, and I know it's only been a few games, but do you think they're going to consistently give him that many minutes? Is that how long we should see him on the court this year, or are they going to try to make that even lower or higher, depending?
Oh, Popovich would just love to stick him in bubble wrap and just open him up in April. But he'll be around 27, 28 minutes. There'll probably be some stretches where he'll get more because Tim's gonna want to play. That's the thing about these guys like Tim, Tony, and Manu. They don't want to sit out games. And they get tired of sitting out too long. But it's a wonderful balance that they've been able to work out with Popovich. And Tim understands the importance of being healthy going into the playoffs. So he won't be over 30 minutes really whatsoever, and I don't think it's going to be too much. I don't think it's going to be too low into the 20s. He'll probably be around 27, 28 minutes per game. And with Tony, I think they're going to treat also Tony a little bit more like Tim. They're going to try to rest him a little bit more, especially around January and February, sort of those dog days of the NBA season, and then give these guys a little bit more minutes going into March. So that way they can kind of build up the chemistry and then they can get their bodies right. And hopefully if everything works out the plan, you know, these guys will go into the postseason with as little injury as possible.
Well, and kind of striking the balance, you know, we know the Spurs are famous for resting players, and we know this is a team that is, you know, their goal is June. It's not right now. And the question becomes, I guess, you know, the Western Conference, you know, we've mentioned Golden State and Oklahoma City and the Clippers and even Houston to an extent. Are, you know, all five of these teams are realistically in the mix to come out of the West and then obviously win the whole thing. You know, how much do the Spurs have to balance resting their players versus seeding? Because we know last year, you know, the Spurs got the Clippers in the first round and just like that, they're out because they had such a difficult matchup. You know, how much do you think that seeding aspect with how good the West is going to factor into Pop's decision making this year?
Pop is always going to try to get the rest whenever he can, and it's very important to him. It's not, you don't just hear it from Pop, you hear it from all the players that health in this league. It's whoever's really the healthiest is going to be there at the end, you know, most of the times. And last season, what was really difficult for San Antonio is that they really didn't have the option to rest Tim all that much, but that it really didn't matter to him because he saw how great he looked in the playoffs. But Tony was banged up. Patty Mills wasn't back until January. Thiago Splitter had health issues for most of the season. You know, Manu Ginobili was missing games, and then Kawhi Leonard had some injury issues early part of the season. So they kind of fell behind, and they were able to get healthy around March, and they were able to kind of climb back into it. And they were there for the 2 seed, but because of how crazy everything was, dropping that last game to New Orleans, that really just put them in a bad spot. So they understand that the importance of seeding, especially now that the division winner doesn't really matter anymore, and how tough the upper half of the Western Conference is, and the bottom half of it's not that easy either. But they understand that they have to be there. They need to be higher up in the seedings to give themselves a better chance. But if they go into the postseason burnt out, it doesn't matter where they are. It doesn't matter if they have the top seed. They'll get bounced because the West is so competitive and so physical. So it's, no one has better experience at it than Popovich as far as long as he's been doing it with how old his core is. And even with the addition of some older veterans, he's going to learn how to do it with them too. And he'll, whatever happens, is, you know, it's going to be whatever he deems. It's going to be the right balance for whatever he deems best for this team because, he, like I said, he's got the most experience with it. He knows his players better than any. No coach knows his players better than Popovich.
So, Aaron, tell me about the Spurs cast.
The Spurs cast?
Yeah.
We're almost coming up on 400 episodes. It's one of the first Spurs podcasts to cover the San Antonio Spurs.
Wait, did you just say 400?
We're almost at 400 episodes.
Wow.
On 380.
Wow, congratulations, man. We're at about 130 ourselves. I mean, 400, that is amazing.
Well, we couldn't have done it without a different lineup of hosts over the years. I'm actually the third or fourth host, I forget. I took over at episode 300. And I came over from the SB Nation group and took over the podcast. And I do it with Jose Grijalva, who lives out in Arizona. So we do a weekly podcast covering the Spurs. And we look at different things. We don't just look at the Spurs. We look at around the NBA and also hot topics. And then occasionally go off the rails and talk about really ridiculous stuff. But during the off season, we'll cover a lot of bigger things. We'll do like big season previews, and then we'll try to bring on guests. So we keep it going year round. I know a lot of podcasts kind of take the summer off along with the league, but we keep it going year round. We'll talk about the Austin Spurs, or formerly the Austin Toros. We'll look at international action that's going on involving Spurs players. We'll look at the summer league. We cover everything. So. And we're available on iTunes. You can find us that way. And you can also just check out the Spurscast weekly. It's stickied at the top of our website, so you can always see it. Just look for the old Fiesta Colors logo where it says Spurscast across the front.
And we'll make sure to tweet a link of that as well when we throw up this episode. What's been the most rewarding part about podcasting, in your opinion?
I don't have to write as much. I used to cover all the home games. I used to do those, and my brain's a little fractured when it comes to writing. I'll sit down, and I'll write things, like, inside out. It's just really weird, and I'm supposed to keep things, like, around 1,000 words. I'll end up going, like, 3,000 just because I don't know when to stop. Mm-hmm. But what's great about the podcasting is that I can kind of go off the rails a little bit. I can go off on tangents, and then we can still kind of dial it back to where we wanted to go. We can bring in people, and I can let them take over. It's what's great about podcasting is that you can bring in these guests from all these different areas, and there's just a wealth of knowledge and talent out there, and you can bring them in, and you can just let them loose, and then about an hour later, you're going, okay, well, hell, that's it. All I got to do is edit, and I'm done. I didn't have to say anything.
Exactly.
So it's been fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a rewarding experience. 400 episodes. Wow, we really got to make sure we're catching up a little bit. But again, you're listening to the Drive and Dish NBA podcast. Kevin Rafuse, Tim Tompkins, Justin Kuzar. We've been on the line with Aaron Prine. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Prine, PRINEPS. And make sure you check out that Project Spurscast. Go there for all the latest Spurs information. And Aaron, we just want to thank you for coming on the show, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I've been trying not to cough into the phone. I guess allergies are really kind of kicked up, so hopefully that didn't pick up on your end.
No, we are very good, man. Again, we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
And wanted to say just thanks again to Aaron for joining us. We really appreciate the Spurs insight, but we would be remiss to say as we get towards the latter half of this episode that, hey, regular basketball has started. There's real basketball on television.
Nothing in this life makes me happier than basketball. I have honestly watched at least 15 games so far, and it's only been a week.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that I have seen every single team play at least one game. I might be skipping somebody. I've watched a couple of Pistons games because the Pistons are off to a strong start, obviously. I've watched all my Phoenix Suns games. I've watched two Philadelphia 76ers games. In my opinion, though, and we spoke about this a little bit on the interview we just did with Aaron, I think this is great, too, because this was from your intro quote, Kevin, that Spurs-OKC game was like, oh my God, amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, my question, because so I watched a little bit of that game as well, and my first thought was, are they trying to get LaMarcus Aldridge the ball too much? Like, is that what they're doing? Is that going to be a problem?
I didn't see him trying to get him the ball enough, and it didn't look like they were like San Antonio was taking advantage of their mismatches a whole lot in that game. But I was looking at that game, and I was just thinking, like, I'm watching both of these teams right here, and they are both championship level teams.
And know what the best part is? There's probably three other teams in the West who are just that good, and it's amazing.
And then I went and watched like a Toronto Raptors and somebody else game. I can't remember who after. And there's just like there's such a difference between the top tier in the West,
the level,
and anybody else in the league. And even looking at Cleveland, like I'm looking at OKC play. I'm looking at the Clippers play, and the Clippers look fantastic, especially that bench unit. And they honestly all to me look much better than Cleveland.
I mean, it's Cleveland again. The advantage to the Cleveland that we say and why I personally think they're going to win it all this year is because they don't have to battle through the West. They have, you know, like you said, the teams in the East that we hype up behind Cleveland are good, but they'd be floundering in the West.
What's the
I don't think the Bulls would be floundering. Like, I think the Bulls have looked really good.
They do. No, I really like, and I, you know, and props to Joakim Noah for knowing he's not a starter.
Well, he even asked the coach. Like, he said, I'm better off coming off the bench, and him and Gibson play really well together.
And Mirotić is playing well at his starting position.
Mirotić is big for them. If they can get if they get the leap from Mirotić this year and he consistently becomes that outside threat and that offensive punch that they've been lacking, you know, they can take the step and they can push Cleveland. Again, still don't think they're beating Cleveland, but they can push Cleveland.
Is there some red flags the fact that the Pelicans haven't won yet?
Well, two of their games are against Golden State.
Yeah, like it's not really fair because those are two games they shouldn't have won. Although I don't really think the Pelicans have looked good. But one thing that I feel like we mentioned maybe on one episode is that you look at the Pelicans roster and they're all banged up. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have Ish Smith who is starting at point guard who flew in to start hours before.
Why did they get rid of Nate Robinson?
Guess he just wasn't playing well.
He's just not really that good anymore. Okay. He's just a fringe NBA player at this point. But
I mean, you have Omar Asik, you have Tyreke Evans, you have Drew Holiday, like they are all banged up.
Drew Holiday's on a minutes restriction. Eric Gordon always seems to be hurt. And it also doesn't help. You know, we'd be remiss to say that the two times the Pelicans played the Warriors, Steph Curry dropped 40 and 53 points.
Well, that also speaks to their perimeter defense, though. That's not nothing. That's an issue.
I'm just saying, you know, it's good to see that Steph Curry, you know, hasn't missed a beat from last year, as I'd like to say, because it is that time again, baby. He's cooking with the sauce.
You know, he's not Klay Thompson.
No, he's cooled down or something happened this offseason.
Speaking of picking right back up where he ended last year.
No, seriously, he's averaged like his first game he had like 10 points, his second game he had 11, which is killing one of my fantasy leagues.
I think he had 16 last night against the Pelicans, so you know, your baby steps, we're getting there. It's early, it's three games. The individual stats are always just the most fun at the beginning of the season. It's only been a few games just because how skewed they are. Like Oklahoma City right now is averaging 125 points per game, and I'd also be remiss to say they're letting up 121 points a game.
Also, the Minnesota Timberwolves are, I believe, as of the time we're recording, the best perimeter defending team in the league.
Really?
And they're number three in the West right now.
It's just like, I think the Pistons, maybe not the most surprising,
but
they
have
looked
good.
Great.
Pistons starting unit looks really solid.
I mean, you got to worry about that Jody Meeks injury.
That's the same injury Durant had.
He's out a good 6 months minimum, but they have looked really dominant in every single game that they've played. Reggie Jackson, I feel like, is a really underrated point guard at this point.
Well, he just wasn't. Reggie Jackson got his due in Oklahoma City, and then there was that whole just fiasco and that ugly breakup the way it ended. And Reggie Jackson just got paid a lot of money to go play at Detroit. And the fact of the matter is, in the second half of the season last year at Detroit, he wasn't very good, and the team wasn't very good.
Now, he was great in the end of the season. I don't know what you're talking about.
The last few games, but when he got there initially, it was a really rough start for Reggie Jackson. He turned it on a little bit at the very, very end, but if you look at the whole body of work, it wasn't really the best. And I think people forgot about him in that regard, and now they're, you know, remembering that Reggie Jackson, oh by the way, was pretty good at one point.
And Kevin, you had mentioned the inflated stats and all that stuff like that, but I was looking at it, and how funny is it that Anthony Davis made 3 3-pointers in the one quarter, and DeMarcus Cousins was 4 of 5 for 3-pointers in the first two games of the season?
Just welcome to pace and space, man. It's crazy. It's the prime example. You know, we talk about all these guys going to, you know, we talk about the emergence of the stretch four and the value of 3-point shooting. I mean, here you have certified fives shooting three-pointers. You know, we never would have ever seen that 10 years ago.
Right. I also like the C.J. McCollum picked right back up from his play in the playoffs, 37 points
he's
in the opener.
He's going to be great this year. I've been hyping him for a
he's
while.
He's been really good.
He might have been my most – I was so upset I couldn't pick him up. Someone in our draft had picked him up, like the pick before me. And I was so mad that I couldn't get
him. Him and Lillard in the backcourt are
even
really
Lillard's
dynamic.
Playing really well right now. I mean, he's taking a lot of shots.
Much
but...
more efficient than I thought he was going to
exactly.
be. That also, they're a sneaky, really, the Trailblazers, they're sneaky fast, and they have a lot of front court depth.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the Houston Rockets, they really have something with Harris and Capella coming off the bench. Like, two are amazing together.
And that was one of the biggest questions is how is Capella going to be able to manage, you know, how many minutes is he going to play, and is he going to be worth playing? I guess.
He's fantastic. Yeah. And him and Harris, like they mesh really well. There's not a lot of spacing between the two, but they can switch when they're defending the front court. And there's not a lot of drop off. They both kind of do the same thing, but they make it work.
Yeah.
The only thing with Houston, though, is, I mean, that's well and dandy, but they've had 2 20-point losses already.
Yeah, they haven't looked great. It's also the beginning of the season, and we weren't going to get hot takey.
Right, we're not going to get hot takey. The only thing I want to mention is that James Harden and Dwight Howard both said, you know, you heard them say after the second loss that, you know, this team's got to play with more urgency. So it's, you know, it's good to see, you know, in the past we've criticized their leadership, and I like to see that leadership. Again, 0-2, it's an 82-game season. We know Houston is going to be in the mix, but it's good to see. I think it's encouraging that you see James Harden taking on that leadership role because, you know, he was arguably the MVP last year, and there's no reason why he can't continue that level of play this year.
Yeah. Oh, did you guys see the banner that the Clippers had up when they played the Mavericks?
I didn't know.
Oh, hold on. I'm going to show you it right now. Ready? Right there.
Oh, that is...
the emoji banner. That
is troll game on so many thousands. That is incredible. I didn't see this.
I was right about
you got to
go
describe
to
it for the listener.
It's okay. So there's the car emoji, there's the plane emoji, then there's a picture of DeAndre Jordan screaming probably after a dunk or a you know, Lob City moment. A money bag emoji, a rocket, a banana, and then a boat emoji, all up in the banners.
Oh, just the banana boat is the best part of that entire thing. That whole
well, I just really envision Chris Paul on a banana boat riding down there.
We are just gonna we took for granted and we knew it at the time, but man, that DeAndre Jordan, that 24 hours was so wild.
Yeah,
what a bizarre scenario. I mean, they were locked in his house at one point.
I thought it was a hotel room.
No, it was his
Blake
house.
Griffin barred his door with a chair.
Yeah, I thought it was a hotel room, though. I didn't know it was his house.
No, it was his house. Because DeAndre Jordan's from Texas. You know, that's the big, you know, he's a Houston guy. Reason that a lot of people were talking about him going back.
What did you guys think of the rookies so far?
I felt like Justice Winslow has looked really great,
that
a lot better.
That three-player dunk?
He's looked really good. I feel like Stanley Johnson has been putting in really meaningful minutes. Devin Booker's played a little bit, and when he's played, he's been good. But, you know, the Suns they're battling for a playoff spot, right. So I'm just not going to see him all that much.
I'm pretty impressed with the class in general to start. Again, you know, two games in, but, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay has played well so far.
Really high turnovers, though.
Right.
Yeah,
these are all things that are going to, you know, Jahlil Okafor, great first game. Pretty solid second game, again off to a good start. Karl Anthony Towns is off to a good start. Again, Stanley Johnson, Justice Winslow,
I kinda like
both
Porzingis
off to great starts.
Too.
Porzingis is playing.
Oh yeah,
you know, solid.
Porzingis
like,
looks great.
For you know, last year it's funny because last year we really hyped the draft class, and I still think there's a ton of potential there for last year. But
and
between
then they all
injuries,
died.
Right? Between injuries and bad luck and other things, they just didn't really play that well. But with this class, they are completely off the opposite start. You see guys legitimately making impacts on games right away.
How's Russell looked? I watched the Lakers Timberwolves game, but I just didn't see a whole lot of.
I mean, I think D'Angelo Russell's looked like a rookie so far. I think he's had moments where, you know, he's their starting point guard, so he's getting the minutes. I think there were, especially in the first game, I think they would have liked to see him a little more from him offensively, but I think the tools are on display there. We know he's a good shooter. We know he's just an excellent passer. And I think it looks like a rookie who's running a bad Lakers team.
So I watched the first Lakers. Maybe it wasn't the first game. I think it was the first game. Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, the Lakers-Timberwolves game.
That was their first one.
Ricky Rubio went off for like 28 points on some bizarre, like, efficient shooting night that I've never seen out of him, which his jump shot does look a lot better. He had like 14 assists or something stupid. So I had to watch this game. And I'm just like, I'm trying to watch the Lakers, and I don't want to watch the Lakers this year. Every year there's like one or two teams I just don't want to watch. For me, that's the Lakers.
You mean you don't want to watch Kobe, Jack?
I can't wait.
No, the one thing that has been interesting with the Lakers, though, is, you know, we love to rip Kobe for just still thinking he's 25 years old and just the greatest player of all time.
That's because, how he
like,
is,
Kobe
though.
Thinks he is. Yeah. But the one thing I'll say is different this year is Byron Scott straight up said after that Timberwolves loss, he said, you know, we had times where there were bad shots taken early in the shot clock, and it was right at Kobe. You know, he mentioned players by name, and Kobe had taken two pull-up threes right at the beginning of the shot clock, highly contested, and were just bad misses. You know, you wonder if they're going to grill Kobe a little bit this year, because Kobe, you know, Kobe is one of the greatest players of all time, but right now he's actually probably a net negative.
Well, I mean, that whole backcourt, I mean, they're out there running like Lou Williams, Kobe, and Jordan Clarkson at the same time.
Just
I'm
bombing.
Like, I'm looking at this. It reminded me of the Suns opening night roster after the Suns got into foul trouble. There's just like really bizarre lineups. And I mean, they just like, they aren't going to be good.
How funny was it when Randall threw the pass off Garnett's back?
I didn't see that play. You told me about it. I didn't see that play.
How is it crazy? Is it now that KG is not even immune to trash talk from rookies? Is it?
KG's
one of the most notorious trash talkers of all time, and Julius Randle was in his face.
Well, no, and what was happening is, and I think Garnett started it because it was like a pregame interview.
Of course, Garnett started it.
It was a pregame interview, and he came up to him and like kind of made a weird face and stuff. And then just the rest of the game, Randle was all over him.
Respect to Julius Randle. Kevin Garnett, you know, obviously, like I said, legendary trash talker. There, if you're going to talk trash, that's fine. You know, you got to do what you got to do to get a competitive advantage. But, you know, respect to Randle for not backing down.
I forget who it was, but they were saying Tim Duncan was doing it. I can't remember who he was guarding, but he kept saying that he was singing Guns N' Roses in his ear the entire game. He's like, I didn't know what to do. Like, it was kind of weird, but I was kind of okay with it.
In American football, Andrew Luck, the one quarterback, every time he gets sacked, he gets up and he'll pat the defensive player on the head and say, great hit, buddy, great hit. You know, just like hype it up. And it flusters the hell out of the defensive players because they'll light this dude up and they'll be like, why is he saying great hit?
Why
for?
Is he
like,
excited
I just laid
about
him out.
It? Yeah. No, whatever works, man. I'm dead serious. That's
whatever
cool.
works, man. But you know what does work? Mailbag. Let's get into it.
Mail.
Gather around, everyone.
Oh, boy.
And always, if you have a mailbag question, you can hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Just send your question with a hashtag mailbag or look for our posts. We usually put them up on Thursdays.
We usually do, but we forgot this week. That's why we only have one question.
Yes. Well, you know, it happens. So the first
one is better than zero.
Exactly.
And it is. It is.
It is.
Great insight there, Kevin.
Thanks, man. That's what I'm here for.
The first question comes from @_HectorJGarza.
The only question.
Well, okay. Yeah, the only question. What do y'all think of the D-League being an ascension league where the best team moves up to the NBA, worse NBA team moves down?
I mean, I don't like it simply for the fact that it's not really practical because we want... You know,
how do you even judge that? Because it's like the best D-League team is playing D-League talent, but the worst NBA team is playing NBA talent.
Well, right. Well, that's number one. And just for the fact that, you know, not everybody... I mean, it would work now because everybody doesn't have a D-League affiliate, mm-hmm. so that it would work in theory, but...
It would also stop teams from wanting to tank too bad.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only really positive I can see. I mean, the problem is that, like, not everybody has a D-League team. If they have a D-League team, they're affiliated. So, like, let's say just for, you know, for Homer's sake, the Delaware 87ers, who are the Sixers D-League team, mm-hmm. get... you know, bumped up. Say they win the D-League and then, like, the Idaho Stampede, I think mm-hmm. it is, get bumped up. Let's just say they win the two, and let's say the Sixers and, I don't know, who's another terrible team?
Lakers.
The Lakers get bumped down this year. And it's just, you know, what do you do with the affiliations then? What do you do with players' rights? It's just...
It doesn't work like...
You know, the concept for this idea comes from soccer, but soccer has their own individual clubs and they're not tied to anything.
Right.
The D-League is just too tied up with everything for it to be practical. So
I'm just looking at it from a standpoint, like, say you're paying you know, someone like, okay, so you're paying Kobe a crap ton of money, and then your team gets moved to a D League team, and now you have a D League team that's got all this money invested in a guy who's now in the D League.
Yeah, and even the best D-League team would just get stomped by any actual NBA team.
It would be the right. biggest upset of all time if a D-League team beat an NBA team.
And the D-League actually just had their D-League draft, too, so pretty exciting stuff.
It's really exciting.
And it's plausible for, I think it's plausible for a D-League team to beat an NBA team. There's one of those things where it could happen. It's not like college where it will not ever happen.
That argument came up again.
That argument is so stupid. And anyone that makes that argument honestly has zero idea of what they're talking about.
No, like it's one of those things where it could happen, but 9 times out of 10, no matter.
No, it's like 99,000 times out of 99,000 times.
No, but I'm talking with the D-League team.
Oh, with the D-League team.
Like, the best D-League team might be able to beat the Sixers 1 out of 10 times. But 9 out of 10 times the Sixers are still going to win.
Mm-hmm. And win big. Like, not just win by probably like 20.
Also, did you see they added the Shaq cam? This is totally off topic, but on TNT, the halftime show, they added a Shaq cam.
No, I do all mine on League Pass. I don't see any TNT or get
Well,
any
this
of that
is
commentary.
Exciting. He now has control, like, where his desk is, of a camera. And so, like, half the time during the halftime show, Shaq's, like, looking on the side just doing stuff. And they're like, what are you doing? And they switch over to the Shaq cam. And he's just, like, looking at someone in the crowd of people that's there. It's really funny.
Great insight there, too, buddy.
Maybe think it.
All the hot takes. But thank you, everyone, for listening to the Drive-In Dish NBA podcast. We really appreciate you, as always. Again, please leave us those reviews on iTunes, or if you're listening on Android, on Stitcher, Player FM, one of those mediums. Again, this is not to stroke our ego. It genuinely helps us move up the rankings of basketball podcasts. And I'd also like to say that we are now in the top 30 for basketball podcasts on iTunes. So thank you, everyone, for your continued support. And again, please leave us those reviews. If you've left us one to this point, we will read it on an upcoming episode. And we've actually got a few countries where we've gotten our first reviews recently, so there's pretty exciting stuff there.
But what I think is the most exciting thing, probably for podcasts, since Spotify added podcasts, which we still can't get on because we aren't with Libsyn, but regardless, is that Google is actually going to be adding a specific podcast section to their Google Music, which Google ditched podcasts about 4 years ago. So it's really hurt, and it's really hurt podcasters per se. And sorry, I used that word. Regardless, Google is going to be introducing podcasts into their streams for their Google Music, and we've submitted ours. So I guess in a couple of months, we're going to figure out exactly how they're going to do that. And so it's exciting stuff.
It should hopefully be on the Google Play Store. So comes standard with any Android phone. So
we've already confused
that.
Yeah, we've already very much confused.
Well, part of what makes this exciting is that Google knows how to get content that people want to know about. Like, they know how, if you're searching for one thing.
Well, they have that whole analytics and stuff. Yeah. So.
And so it's really good news for podcasters. But I guess this isn't a podcast. Well, everybody, so we'll stop talking about it.
But everybody knows we do love analytics.
Yes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Drivin' Dish NBA. You can follow me personally. I'm at Justin C. on the air. You can follow Tim at Radio Tim NBA, and you can follow Kevin at Refuse to Lose.
I think we've done enough dancing for today, so why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Star Side.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Pick it up!
Da-da-da-da-da. Hey! Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da-da.
Hey! Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.